The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
That's called a show open with these guys coming up next. Good morning. It is a Saturday morning, March 23rd, 2024. I'm Peter Boyle, 710 KNUS. The weather, 67 the high today, then it drops off 48 tomorrow and 37 degrees on Monday. These are brothers in arms. Please say good morning. And the book is entitled Radio, What Happened. Terry Bettis is with us and Jim Christofferson is with us. Hey, fellas, good morning, man. Thanks for coming on the show. And I was saying to Radio Biz, welcome back, man. Thanks for doing the show.
Peter, we're excited to be here talking to the people in Denver.
And
Yes, absolutely.
And do me a favor and identify when you speak so somebody knows what. You guys know this. You don't need to hear me say it. But let's start, as the man said, the beginning of the beginning. Terry, your career in the radio business, if you'd start there, please.
You know, in 1974, I was going to school in Lubbock and decided, had always wanted to get into radio and decided to go to the Elkin School of Broadcasting, which was absolutely the best decision I ever made. I went there, had a great teacher. That was in Dallas in the fall of, the winter, January of 1974. And I was there for 6 months and then my teacher, my professor said, go out, find a job. And so we started going around and applying at radio stations and had quite a few great stories about that. Ended up in Amarillo and walked in, handed him my air check, which most people don't know about. Handed him my air check. He proceeded to throw it in the trash. And I thought, oh, my, what's going on? He basically said, if you can start tonight at midnight, I'll hire you.
I love that story.
I said, I've got an apartment in Dallas. He goes, I don't care. I need somebody. My afternoon guy just left town with the general manager's daughter. I need to move people up in shifts. And I need somebody tonight at midnight. If you can be here at midnight, I'll hire you. I'm your man.
I suspect you guys do as well. I collect radio stories when people tell stories like that, and that's a wonderful story. His daughter runs off with the guy, and you get a gig. What are the odds?
Yeah.
I
called my mom and I said, "Mom, I got a job." She said, "How much money are you going to make?" And I said, "I have no idea."
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I didn't care.
No.
I just knew I was going to be on the air, and as it turned out, I made $110 a week.
That's a lot of money back then.
Oh, it was.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter how many hours you worked.
No.
In fact, I mentioned in the book, I asked the, after a month or so, I asked the program director, I said, "Well, I'm working like 55 hours a week. Do I get overtime?" And he said, "No." He said, "We've got a unique pay plan. We're actually, the more you work, the less you get paid." And I was so green, I thought, "Oh, okay. I'll just take my 110 a week and be happy with it."
Which one of you two had to go read the meters? I've read the book. I finished it last night. The book's entitled Radio, What Happened? Because I got a meter reader moment in my life, too. Who of you two had to go read the meters?
This is Jim, Peter, and that was me. I worked at a – my intro to radio I could explain, too, if you want to in a minute. But,
please.
But I had to work at a 50,000-watt AM radio station in Fort Worth, Dallas, that was directional. So, you know, I needed a first phone license. So I think Terry and I may have crossed paths at that broadcast school that you referenced earlier, but I had to, and we broadcast from the transmitter in Cannondale, Texas, and we had to read the meters there. A 50,000-watt transmitter back in those days was in a room the size of, I don't know, a convention center, and a couple of people actually died in there from electrocution, for goodness sake. So it filled me with just a little bit of trepidation to even think about reading the meters. But yeah, in the old days, you'd have to read them at the top of the hour and the bottom of the hour.
And?
This is Terry. I got a transmitter story I got to tell you. My first job while I was at Elkins, they said, hey, if you can get a part-time job, get it. And so Denton, Texas was about 40 miles away from Dallas. And so I got a job at KDNT Denton as a transmitter watch. And and I would drive from Dallas after class, and I would drive to Denton. I'd get there about sunset, which is when we had to change power. I went immediately to the transmitter building, which was 3 miles outside of town. I would go to the transmitter building, go to the four towers, read the meters, and then I had a cot in the transmitter building, and I slept. I had a little TV with rabbit ears and tinfoil, and I would watch some TV, and I would go to sleep. And then I'd have to set an alarm and get up at sunrise, which, this was spring, so it was probably 5:45 or 6 o'clock, and then I would raise power and get in my car and drive back to Dallas. And so, and the one thing that I got to do, if you'll remember, people our age remember Hank Aaron hitting his record-setting home run. I watched that from the KDNT transmitter building outside of Denton, Texas, one night on my little black and white TV.
My gig was, the meters were outside, and I was the low man on the stick. And you could send away a postcard and get something called a third phone, which the three of us know, and I'm sure some folks in the audience. And so I would go out in the snowstorms and the rain and everything, and because the meters were outside, and I'd write this stuff down on a clipboard. And then one day the light went on. Not these things don't change. Why am I out here?
you're not saying you did that without going to the transmitter.
Yes, I am saying that. But it was just like, yeah, the transmitter, the meters were behind these hedges. And the hedges would be covered with snow or soaking wet. And I'm going back there like the good little, good little soldier, writing these things down with holding a flashlight, and I went, the hell with this. These things, this meter. Jim, to get your, you started out to talk about how you got into business.
Sure, I'd love to. I think in the book I reference the fact that I was one of those kids that when mom and dad said go to bed, I would be under the blankets listening to major market radio stations on a 2-transistor radio from Duluth, Minnesota. So I've always wanted to be in radio. And if I sound a little out of breath here, it's not only because you're a very charming and exciting guest on our program, but I've got pulmonary fibrosis, and I've been kind of struggling with that for the last couple of months. But anyhow, we are a group of nerdy guys, and I think, as Terry said, we're all about the same age. So you may remember they used to have little kits that you could buy, and you could broadcast from your house on an AM radio band. So a friend of mine actually put together a radio station in his bedroom, and we had a fully functional radio station with turntables and tape decks, and we were 13 or 14 years old, and we had a fake radio station in his bedroom. In the book, I also reference that we would have in his bedroom window where the main studio was a light that would flash red whenever we keyed the toggle switch. And we didn't realize that a red light flashing in a bedroom window would send out a signal, but it wouldn't be a radio signal.
No.
I took that vast experience to a local station. And at the age of 14 or 15, I got a job playing religious tapes on Sunday morning at a country music station in Duluth, Minnesota. And that's how it all started for me.
That's the best. Limbaugh built his own radio station as well. If you read his book, he would be upstairs in his bedroom and broadcasting to his mom and dad downstairs.
Yeah,
so
he
early, like yourselves. Plenty of my friends, I get into business much later, but plenty of my friends There, one in particular, the legendary Charlie Martin, his mother used to drive him to the station when he had a shift. He was too young to drive.
Wow.
And he was gigging. Yeah. So
yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, we actually interviewed a guy who in Dallas was working at one of the radio stations. Actually, he was outside with some of the DJs outside of KLIF. And he said, what is this? And I said, well, it's a radio station. Well, why don't you come in? Well, they started using him as a little board op when they would need breaks. And Gordon McClendon walks in and goes, who are you? What are you doing here? And he goes, hang on, sir. I've got a break here. Gordon said, where's your dad? And he said, well, my dad's in the Army, but where's your mom? Well, I can call her. And he said, well, if you're going to be here, I need to talk to your mom. And then he actually hires Gordon McClendon hires the guy to be a board op. But he was like 14, 15 years old at the time.
I mean, the book is entitled Radio, What Happened, 100 Years of Changes. Terry Bettis and Jim Christopherson are our guests. And again, obviously you guys collect radio stories as well. I have this theory about us that there's something wrong with us. You know that. I mean, just
oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
There really is, and I've met the most amazing people I think I've ever met in my life. I met in this business. Do you guys echo that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's indigenous maybe to all traditional media. My father-in-law was a printer and a newspaper guy. They get printer's ink in their blood. You know,
yes.
Radio guys just get radio yes. in their blood. So yeah, for those of us who've been doing it since puberty, it's something that you want to do. But I wouldn't necessarily categorize this as crazy. Have you ever met any of the people that write games now?
Oh, my heavens. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's all kinds of crazy people in the world. But you're right. It's been a very fulfilling career. And so glad that I was able to do exactly what I wanted to do all my life from a very young age. Can I divert for just one second?
Sure.
You are at KNUS.
Yes.
And those call letters are legendary in Central Texas. Jerry can give you a little more information on it, but when I was there, KNUS, referencing Gordon McClendon again, he owned that station. He owned KLIF and KNUS, and put it on the air as an interesting mixture of Top 40 and AOR. And I remember listening to it, thinking it was really good. They started with no DJs, and then they added DJs later. In the as a matter of fact, I don't know if you know this guy or not, but his name is Jimmy Rabbit. He was a Dallas Texan who became a disc jockey out in L.A. when I was there. And he actually was the first person to cue the toggle switch at KNUS. But those call letters go back to Texas.
Sure.
And then McClendon changed the format from music to news, and that's why it became KNUS. So when did you all pick those call letters up? You know, I don't.
It started out, this was radio station's call letters were KERE, and it was a country AM. And I was working at a country AM in an opposition. We had an AM and FM, a KLAK. And then I went from jocking into talk radio, and I don't know when KNUS came out of that.
Okay.
I'm an on or about. But this was a country AM. And, you know, that's the beauty of all of this. The book is Radio, What Happened, 100 Years of Changes, where we've all been in the middle of these, where the religious tapes, when you were talking about playing religious tapes, we all got canned on Christmas Eve, which was a real telltale, like, you've got to learn something from this. But I'm going, you know, I'm leaving, they said, you know, this the boss wanted to see us. And I'm thinking it's a Christmas bonus. I really did.
Yeah.
I thought, I'm going to get $100 or something out of the guy. And it was see you later. But he said, oh, by the way, you want to come back tomorrow morning and play music tapes. I said, of course, because I needed the money. Yeah. So, you know, that's part of this, isn't it? That we cowboyed our lives is how I describe it. And I don't say that in a negative way, but you cowboy this business.
I'm not sure what that means, Peter. Can you
explain? Like, you know, the old guys in the West that would, you know, travel with one group, travel with another group, would cowboy this herd, cowboy that herd.
Oh, okay.
That we are cowboys. And how many stations, Jim, did you work at?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I think there are 14,000 radio stations in the country.
Yep.
I may have worked at 11,000.
No, of course. Of course. No,
I really don't know. But I've, you know, I went from being a DJ to a manager to an owner.
Yeah.
So my station list isn't all that long. But then after I sold my last radio station, I started working for Cumulus for about 10 years and then Town Square Media. So I actually made more money working for corporate radio than I did when I owned my own stations, too. So, again, I don't really have a long, long, long list of radio stations that I've been at. But even knowing that, still way too many.
Terry, how many calls did you work for?
You know, I worked. I only worked on the air at one, KIXZ in Amarillo. And I was only on the air for about 4 years. And then the manager came to me and said, how would you like to not work weekends and make more money?
Sales.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, you're going to sales. And I didn't have to do a weekend shift because you worked 6 days a week as a jock, or we did back then.
Sure.
And, you know, by that point I was married. I wanted to be home on the weekend. So I went into sales and then got hired at another station there in town, and then was hired to move to another city as general manager at the young age of 26.
Wow.
And and worked at three or four stations in that market as either general manager or part owner. So six or seven, I would say, right now. So, you know, I think Jim beats me on the amount of radio stations that he worked at.
The, you know, the tape and resume part of this, and you talk about tapes and resumes, and guys would up and move across the country in a heartbeat, and I got to meet some of them, legends that do precisely what you're talking about, but they would make the stops all the way to L.A. or wherever, one of the top five or six markets. What's the most money you, I mean, I know Limbaugh made $4, 5, 6, 7 million a year. Was Limbaugh the highest paid guy that ever was ever in this business?
Might be Howard Stern. Hard to say.
I was going
to
say,
Limbaugh's contract was $250 million. So
wow.
I'm assuming that it is. You know, I made just a little bit more than that,
yeah.
Peter.
Both of us.
But most of it was trade out at restaurants.
T.O. T.O.
I'll tell you
a story. My children are now adults, and we went to a restaurant one time. My daughter was 8, and when the menus are bigger than the kid, and she pulls the menu aside, looks at me, she said, "Is this a trade?"
Wow.
Yeah, my son asked me one time. There was a steakhouse in Abilene called Western Sizzling.
Yeah.
And as he grew and got older, he said, "Dan, why do we always eat at Western Sizzling?" I said, "Well, because it was a trade."
It was a trade.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of that goes on anymore. We traded cars and, I mean, there was what could you not trade?
I think the biggest thing I ever traded was carpet for a house.
That's good.
Jim, what about you? What's the biggest thing you ever traded for?
Well, we did the cars, obviously, particularly in Los Angeles. But, you know, I wanted to give away a house one time, but I was never able to put that together. But before we go too much further, Peter, can I give you a line if you're saving funny lines for radio guys?
Of course.
I worked for a guy by the name of John Walton, West Texas millionaire, who at the age of 18 owned 7 AMs seven FMs and seven TV stations. And that's all you could have at that time. You know, that was before deregulation. So he had a full complement of AM, FMs, and TV stations. A very young guy and just a funny guy. He told me, and I'll never forget it, you can tell the success of a radio DJ by the size of his U-Haul trailer.
Ooh.
So, yeah, I mean, kind of hurtful, but
no.
But it kind of sums up exactly what you were saying, too.
Have either of you guys ever seen a film, it's a sleeper, entitled Telling Lies in America?
I have not.
You got to write it down. You got to see it. It's about the scandals, Paola Plugola, and a disc jockey in Cleveland, Ohio, which is kind of like a, they're knocking off a little bit of Alan Freed, but it's a wonderful, wonderful film. It speaks volumes, but it's entitled Telling Lies in America. And, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you start talking Paola and pay for play and things, takes you down a whole different rabbit hole.
Let's do this. Let me sell something. Let me do something. We'll come back. I hope your time's forever this morning. Let's talk about that part of it. I'm not that old, but my mentors told stories about the Paola era and Plugola era and what that did to radio. These guys are great. Terry Bettis and Jim Christofferson. The book is, you want to put everybody on hold, Lou? The book is Radio, What Happened, 100 Years of Changes. Dan Kaplis' law firm. Danny believed to be the only lawyer in Colorado to have done the things that he's done, the five straight multimillion-dollar jury verdicts and motor vehicle crash cases and his partners and the firm's history of seven- and eight-figure settlements and verdicts that speak for themselves. They're the firms where good people from all walks of life, without regard to ability to pay, that legal representation that Kaplis can survive and provide. I tell you what, we went through it. My family went through some stuff. We needed an attorney, and I called Danny because he's a friend. And it's unbelievable. No one could have done a better job, and he cared, and he did it right. And Danny's law firm believes that who you hire speaks volumes about you to everybody involved in the case, and they suggest you choose a law firm that shares your values. The firm believes its core values have been the foundation of all the success of faith, integrity, hard work, and dedication. Danny's on the internet. It's Dan Kaplis, C-A-P-L-I-S, law.com. Call him, 303-770-5551, 303-770-5551. You got a question near there, 303-770-5551. Just great guests. Good morning, everyone. It's a Saturday morning, March the 23rd, 2024. Good old 710 KNUS, 67 the high, and 48 on Sunday. The book is entitled Radio, What Happened, 100 Years of Changes. Terry Bettis and Jim Christofferson are with us. And do you guys mind if in the next couple of segments we have people that want to get on the air with us? You guys want to take calls as well?
Oh, absolutely.
Good. Yeah. All right.
As long as there's no math involved, you know, I'm ready to go.
I can't do math either.
Okay, good.
My motto after all these years in this business is, I can't do math and I can't do marriage.
Whoa. Well, that could be two segments, but let me tell you something else that you can do, Peter. You can do an endorsement commercial better than anybody I've ever heard. That was very sincere.
Oh, you're kidding.
I think it touched your listener on a personal and emotional level, and I'm quite impressed.
Well,
very good.
Kind. He's a friend, and that's kind of you to say. And that's what we do. We also learn to sell, don't we?
Well, yes. Yeah, have to. Everything is a sales job.
Before we take the call, I got one more. It's not as good as Jim's red light story. But it's one more short story about getting into this business. When I left Elkins, you know, I just assumed I would have to go to work at a small market radio station. And part of our book talks about the importance of small market radio stations and what they meant to their communities. But I went to a small market in deep West Texas and with a friend of mine, and I had very long hair and he had a beard. And this town was kind of known to be a cowboy town, but we went in and applied at the radio station, and he said, I'll hire both of you right now because I need workers. But he pointed at me and he said, but you'd have to cut your hair. and pointed at the other guy and said, "You'd have to cut your beard." And I said, "Well, why would I have to cut my hair?" And he said, and I swear it's exactly what he said. He said, "Son, the last long-haired DJ I had at this radio station met up with some of the cowboys. They broke his leg, and they threw him on a train. And he is now somewhere in East Texas." And I said, "No, I don't think I'm going to work here." So we went on down the road.
I got a haircut for my first gig. I to be a writer for the traffic reports, and at the AAA Auto Club, that was a pretty conservative outfit, good outfit. And I went in for heard about the job, and I had shoulder length, and just like the pair of John Lennon glasses and a beard, and met Dan Hopkins, who's been an influence in my life. And Danny said, "You got to cut your hair." I said, "You got scissors?" Because I wanted the job. And I want to come back to something, too, and we'll take calls, I promise. We were talking about payola, too, and there was a segment of Top 40 radio, principally in the 50s. Terry and Jim, if you want, talk about what happened, and then we'll get to calls.
Well, Jim, I'll take this first, but the only experience I have with this was a couple of instances, one as a music director in Amarillo and one as a general manager in Abilene. And really, as a music director, I really didn't experience any payola, but the music, it was a different time. The music reps would come into town. They would take you to dinner, and try to get you to play their records. And I thought the one thing they would do is they would come in teams, like an RCA guy would be there, an MCA guy would be there, and a Capitol Records guy would be there. They'd all come in, they'd plan their trips together, and then would take us out to eat at the most expensive place in town, and they would all get a receipt for the entire meal.
Yeah.
And so they'd all go back and say, "Yeah." And then between them, they'd split it. So they were making money. But as a general manager, the way they got around it was the record companies would call and say, "Hey, we've got this record we really want on the playlist. And if you'll add it, we'll buy an advertising schedule on your station this week of $1,000.
Sure.
You know, and so that's the way they kind of got around that. And I remember one time there was a song that was a horrible song. And my program director came to me and he goes, "I don't even like this song, but they're offering us $1,500 if we'll play it." And I just said, "I'm going to leave that up to you. I think it's a horrible song." He said, "I'm going to turn it down." Came back in about 20 minutes. And this was Tuesday. I think ad day was Tuesday at 5.
Yeah. Yeah.
He came back about 3 o'clock and he said, "Well, they've upped it to 2,000. And I said, "I'm going to leave that decision up to you." He came back at 3:30 and said, "Well, it's up to 3,000.
Yeah.
And I said, "Don't even let me know. I don't care what you do." He calls me on the way home or after I got home. And he said, "It's $5,000.
Wow. Good grief.
And we only have to play the first 2 minutes of the song." And I said, "I think we should do it."
Yeah. Sure. Jim?
The 50s was a little bit before my time, so I never had any kind of direct involvement in payola, which I'm happy for. I mean, I'm dumb enough to say, "Oh, gosh, yeah, I'll take that money," and then get kicked out of the business. But, yeah, by the time I was programming and a disc jockey, it was pretty much what Terry was talking about. They would come in, and they would just make you feel as if you're the greatest radio person in the history of the business, really, really trying to lure you, with prizes and stuff like that. So when I was a young program director, we kind of I was in that same era as some of the people that are now leading the industry. But we shortened playlists and we tightened up the sound of the station and got a lot of gold records for breaking songs first. So never got any money, but yeah, they did get around that by doing promotional things too. So now that mostly all of the radio stations are run by companies, that promotional stuff goes to headquarters and it's distributed there. But at one time it went directly to the radio stations. So yeah, I never benefited from, and thank goodness, from payola or plugola.
My mentor was a guy by the name of Bob Lee, and he worked at JBK in Detroit, and they were hit-making cities, and he was the Rockin' Rebel, Robert E. Lee, and he told me the stories about how that worked, and, you know, you'd be doing your shift, and a record hype guy, you know, the guys you're talking about, would say, hey, Bob, give me your car keys, and you flip them your car keys. And when you got off the shift, you'd have four new tires on your car, money in the ashtray, a coat for your wife in the back seat, and then a record, you know, in the passenger side. And so all that goes away, and they invent somebody called music directors. And the best one of those guys was a fellow, he's gone now, his name was Bill Ashford, and Billy had a plaque on his wall that said, Alan Freed died for your sins.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And you guys talk about Alan Freed. By the way, the fact that you love the show about Cincinnati, WKRP, I did too. And I got to meet a lot of the people that were part of that. And whoever wrote that show, they knew this business, did they not?
Oh, I've told hundreds of people. If you've seen that TV show, that is exactly how radio was in the mid-70s.
Yes, I agree.
Exactly. Now, we didn't all have Lonnie Anderson.
Jennifer.
But we had the crazy sales manager. We had the engineer. Mine was Jerry the engineer. Yeah. Gruff, hated disc jockeys, hated everything about the business, and he was the one that we relied on to have a signal. It never made sense to me, but the general manager, the crazy DJs, it was exactly like that TV show.
Absolutely. I mean, I know Johnny Fever. I've met him.
Really?
Oh, I mean, don't know him, but I know him, You know,
mine was C.C. Crowe, the Big Bird. And he was a 325-pound, seven to midnight guy. Yeah. And it was C.C. Crowe, I'm the Big Bird.
I was a traffic reporter, and that's how I backed into the business. I became the on-air guy. And I'd never been in a radio station. And finally, when you go in for the first time and you start to see these people and you've listened to them for, you know, X or Y or been their traffic reporter – and then they start to, you know, you really start to understand how this business works, and it doesn't work like anything else works. It just
it's not like anything else.
No, it isn't. Let me see what my time is. I'm not even looking. We need to pause. We come back. Our lines are jammed, and when we come back, we'll take. How's your time, you guys? You guys got plenty of time this morning, I hope.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, cool.
You said you wanted us for 2 hours. So
2 hours. 2 hours.
Careful
it is.
What you ask. Hey, be careful what you ask for.
Hey, listen, when you guys are here, I don't have to work. I could take calls and you can talk. And hang on. So the book is Radio, What Happened, 100 Years of Changes. Terry Bettis and Jim Christopherson are our guests. 67 will be our high today. And look, guys, you've heard a lot about treating low testosterone and how it improves your sleep and your workouts and your energy levels and a lot more, but talk to you about your sex drive. And low testosterone can have a significant impact on your desire for intimacy. If you're in a relationship, you're wanting to be in a relationship, a low sex drive can be a problem. Listen, I'm an old guy, and I know this works. It's good news. RockyMountainMensClinic.com. Take the low T quiz on their website, a simple 10-question quiz with yes-no answers. It takes 2 minutes. Then schedule a consultation with Rocky Mountain Men's Clinic. Colorado licensed medical provider reviews your results with you and discusses your options. Way above boards. Really great folks. Most of the appointment is only $99. And it includes medical consultation, a T test, a PSA test. And if you sign up For a testosterone treatment the day of your appointment, your visit is free. Rocky Mountain Men's Clinic has served the Front Range for nearly a decade, successfully treating tens of thousands of men. Call them today, 720-440-7900, 720-440-7900, 720-440-7900, or RockyMountainMen'sClinic.com, and tell them Peter Boyle sent you. Morning, everybody. It's a Saturday, March the 23rd, 2024. Good old 710 KNUS. I'm Peter Boyle's wonderful guest. The book is entitled Radio, What Happened. Terry Bettis is with us, and Jim Christofferson is with us. Let's just go to the first call. Go to Jack. I think he's calling from Wyoming. Hey, Jack, you're on the radio show with great guests. Good morning.
Yeah, I got three things to hit you with real quick, Lamont, if you can take it.
Sure.
Stand it. But when you talk about payola and all that, Alan Freed comes up, and you're talking in the 50s. But there's a much bigger story on Don Robey when it comes to manipulation of recording artists, getting them in and keeping them out of certain markets. Somebody should write a book or do a movie on that one. Okay, let me jump to the other one. You're talking about everybody that you talk to is younger than you. Well, I'm not in that group, and you know that. And let me... Let me hit you with another one. You were talking about alcoholism. Read John Barleycorn by Jack London.
Right, listen.
And, you don't have to read it because you lived it, but have your listeners read it.
Okay.
And that's all I got, man.
All right, man. Thank you. All right, we go to Lita. Lita, you're on the radio show. Great guest. Good morning.
Hi. Have you ever heard of Del Flood? Probably not. He was on in the Denver market, late 40s and early 50s. And he broadcast from home, and he gave his home phone number, and people could call him up. And he had this, I'm sure he must be passed on by now, but he had, have you ever heard Time by the, anyway, Time with all the bells and whistles and jingles, and he would, people could call him up to wake up your husband or your wife or whoever, and you could crank up the radio, and he would ring all these bells and whistles, like the song Time. And I just wondered if you'd ever heard of him.
No, ma'am.
Okay. Well,
right.
Thank you for taking
you.
My call.
Right. We're back to Terry and Jim. 710 KNUS Radio, What Happened is the book. We were talking about the other part of it is we were talking about WKRP. Every one of those things happened. Every one of them. And
yeah, I don't think I had any turkeys fly the helicopter. Yeah. But yeah, a lot of those things did happen.
I'm told, I don't know this. This is why this business has a mythology to it. That actually happened. That was based on a real. A real incident.
That's true. It wasn't from a helicopter or an airplane. I think it was from the back of a truck.
Something.
But something bizarre happened that animal rights activists got involved in as well too.
The same story.
Yeah.
Well, talk about promotions. You do a whole part of the book on promotions. Jim, why are by the way, promotions departments are now by and large gone from radio stations.
Yeah.
So why? And what?
Well, again, now it's radio, what happened, the changes in radio over the last 100 years. But our focus is really from, and I love the caller that had that reference to 1940s radio. That was pretty special, too. But our focus is really 60s, 70s, top 40 radio. That's what kind of rings our bell. But promotions are very important because, you know, you wanted to be able to make sure that people would remember your dial position or your call letters when somebody would get what was an Arbitron diary or maybe a Hooper phone call. But you wanted to be able to make sure that you were doing some things that created creative top of mind awareness for your call letters or call signs. So it became very important to have innovative and ways to engage with the with listeners, with the technology that we had at that time. So, you know, I've always been a big believer in promotions, even though I know that, you know, only maybe one-tenth of the audience would get actively engaged, unless it was something just mind-boggling, but just a small fraction of the audience would get engaged. But the whole audience could become engaged just by retaining the call letters and associating it with these different promotions that, that we do. So we've given away trips to, Mexico, Italy.
Oh, yeah.
As a matter of fact, I think the best promotion that I have ever been involved in was here in Abilene, Texas, where I live. We actually had a competition at the local mall, a talent competition, and we were able to send two people to Hollywood. I owned an oldie station at the time, and we were able to send two people from Abilene, Texas, to Hollywood to appear on the television show The Wonder Years.
Wow.
And they're in it. I mean, they didn't have a line or anything, but they were a couple of classmates of that young boy that was the star of the show. So, you know, you wanted to do some things that were distinctive and memorable. Giving away cash is a great way to do it. But if you can come up with promotions that tie your call letters to a high profile event, that's just money in the bank.
Now,
did that answer your question?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm still breathing a little labor.
No, please, you're great. Please.
Giving away cash has got us in trouble. Jim, I don't know if you'll remember the time we did that back in 87, I want to say. We did a promotion, and it was giving away $10,000. And it was show up at the radio station at a certain time. Well, we had hundreds of people show up, and the way we were giving away the money was in small amounts. We weren't given one $10,000 winner. Well, the crowd didn't like that very much. And the DJ, I mean, I think he's still mad at me because he felt like he took his life into his hands. I've still got video of it, him walking out in front of the radio station being mobbed by people wanting the $10,000 and him going, wait, well, hang on just a minute. And like I say, I think he's still mad at me for putting his life in danger.
Our dial position is 710 on the AM dial. This is 2024. We are sponsoring a brunch Sunday morning, $7.10 for an all-you-can-eat breakfast brunch.
And yes,
yeah, there it is. I mean,
I love it.
Oh, thank you. I love it as well. But what was the? You do have a whole segment in the book on the last great radio contest. That was amazing. Yeah. Talk about that.
Oh, it was called the Last Contest.
Yes.
And anybody in radio in the mid-70s remembers the Last Contest. That statement alone should tell you how effective it was.
Yeah.
I think every DJ at every radio station had heard about the Last Contest. And it was because of the promos that they ran. The promos, the deep voice that said, we're having the last contest. It's the greatest contest. Here's prize package number 51. And it would be a trip around the world for two that would last for 6 months, value of $350,000, for example. Or prize package number 40 would be a his and hers Ferrari.
Mm-hmm.
You know, valued at $180,000. Well, the key was there was only going to be one winner, and they had to listen, to and Jim, you may remember what the cue was, but you know, they had to listen for something, and when that person was able to call in, they got to choose the one prize package they wanted. But they ran promos for 100 different packages.
Yeah.
And that's what people remember is the his and hers Ferraris.
Yes.
Or the swimming pool that will be installed in your backyard.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Things you're going, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
But they gave one away. And it was, to me, it's at the very top of all the promotions.
That really is. What was the ratings gain? I think you mentioned it, but they had a significant gain.
Oh, yeah. It was KCBQ in San Diego that did it, and they became, as far as I know, the number one station based on that contest. But that's one of many. I mean, you know, in our markets, we gave away pizzas, you know, or movie tickets,
yeah,
or coupons,
yeah,
or hey, be the 10th caller for, you know, whatever. We just wanted to give something away,
yep,
and it generated phone calls.
The prize patrol, another personal favorite.
Right.
Yeah, the prize patrol. And when being the 15th caller, we would take about five calls and say, you're 15th. And you always, you know, that kind of stuff was just what we did. And I who taught you? Because I learned from the old top 40 disc jockeys of the 1950s. And they were old guys, and I got into the business. And they knew all of the tricks of the trade, all of them.
And you know, one of the guys we learned from, you know, in the 70s, I don't know when, it might have been in the 80s when the consulting business became such a big deal. But in the 80s, when I was managing Q100 in Abilene, we were consulted by a gentleman by the name of, it was brothers, George and Reg Johns. And they would kind of direct us in the way to do promotions. And they believed in the, hey, make it sound unbelievable. Get the press, get the notoriety. It doesn't really matter what you give away. But we did a phone, talking about the 10th caller. We were going to do a promotion, and we were going to take the 100th caller.
All right.
For $5,000 or whatever. And we knew, based on previous experience, that it would probably shut the phone system down.
Sure.
And so we had the phone company actually come out to the station, and we asked them to do a press conference. And at the press conference, which the TV stations covered, they said, we have asked this radio station to not do this promotion.
Yeah.
Well, man, what kind of press?
It
was fabulous.
It
was just great.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. We, real quick, we had a boss named John Lego. We always called him Captain Showbiz. And we'd get jammed up. You know, you're doing talk. And go into John's office, and he would say, did they spell your name right? And, yeah, boss, he said, did they get the call letters? And then finally he'd say, did they get the time you're on? That was the stuff, right? I mean, the negative stuff was, I'm being told to take a turnaround. I'm going to take a break to top of the hour stuff, and we'll come back. These are wonderful guests. Terry Bettis is with us. Jim Christopherson is with us. On air, radio, what happened? Well, now we'll talk about what happened on the other side. This is 710 KNUS, 67 will be the high. Then 48 on Sunday, comes rain, comes back in, 37 on Monday. I'm Peter Boyles. This is Radio Free Denver, good old 710 KNUS.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment, and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.